Welcome in to a Thursday night edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. We are giving you yet another update on the Jimmy Butler saga. It is getting crazier and crazier. Why you shouldn't expect Caris LeVert to be included in a potential deal, and then going rapid fire through the most pressing questions we have going into training camp. All that and more next on the Locked On Nets podcast.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Nets. I am your host, Gavin Shaw. After 4 years covering the Phoenix Suns, I moved back to my native New York to do this micropod, is what they're calling it. No, we're not compensating for anything. We just love Nets basketball. Again, I'm Gavin Shaw, and I'm joined by my co-host, Josh Bass, who wants to eat dinner, so he wants to roll through this podcast nice and smooth. Josh, how's it going?
This is actually going to be my second dinner of the night. So I had a mini dinner, and I'm going to have another mini dinner.
Oh,
trying that out.
Wow. Okay. What time was your first mini dinner?
It's like 5:30. Okay. The other one's going to be like 8.
What did you have? Is this like an appetizer? Was this like a plate of a meal?
I had leftovers from Great Upper West Side Turkish establishment Bustan.
Oh yeah, I really want to. I want to go with you and Barry one time. I know I'm not even just like trying to get a free meal out of it. Like I genuinely just want the experience of eating at a fine Turkish restaurant with you and your dad. Can you just tell Barry
one day. If the Nets make the playoffs, maybe we'll celebrate.
Okay, all right. I think you should just organize it as a random it's just a surprise that I'm there. Like, you're not expecting me to be there, but you text me like a week in advance. Like, I show up in like a full suit. I tell Barry I'm on a date, but I'm like, no, she doesn't matter. I want to sit with you. And then I move over to you guys, and he's like, ah, why?
Yeah, it's not going to happen, but I like your thinking. Dream big.
Okay. All right. I think it could happen. All right. Let's start off. Jimmy Butler update. The report is that I don't even have a source on this. I think I just heard it on Bill Simmons' podcast. They mentioned it, that Caris LeVert is off limits. And, Bill Simmons proceeded to mock that, asking if Caris LeVert would even be in the top 10 man rotation on the Celtics, which obviously he would be. I think he'd be like the sixth man on that team, but that's neither here nor there.
I don't know about sixth man.
I think he's better than Rozier.
Is this saying that Baines and Horford are going to start? Brown and Gore start the year.
Yeah, I was saying they like start their best five. Like, he would be like the sixth best player on the team.
I think Rozier's better and Marcus Smart's better.
No, Caris is way better than Mark. At least he will be this season. I don't know. Okay,
he will be. I think he'll have a better career than Marcus Smart. But judging by last year, I would rather have Marcus Smart on my team by far than LeVert.
I think
that will probably change this year. It'll probably be even.
Yeah.
But I think you're underrating how good Smart is on defense.
Maybe. I don't know.
I have to include him on my top 25 list.
Yeah, it's true. I did have him on mine. No, behind Caris LeVert, because I hate guys who can't shoot at all. All right. Any other thoughts on that? Like, I mean, I guess I want to say it's surprising that you wouldn't trade Caris LeVert for even a year of Jimmy Butler, because on like the face of it, that sounds absurd. But I think given where you and I have been at on this conversation, and seemingly where the Nets have been at on this conversation, that didn't surprise me at all. I wasn't blown away, and I totally agree with it.
Yeah, I'm of the opinion that it's a bit ridiculous. I mean, if the Nets could get Jimmy Butler for Caris LeVert, is a bit ridiculous. I mean, it's just the concept of it. We have a player who's average at this point. I mean, has a lot of potential for a potential top 12 player in the league and a bona fide superstar, who has said that he wants to be with the Nets and will definitely re-sign with the team. Obviously, he's on the end of his career, or will be on his next contract. But to give up a piece like LeVert, who could be something special, but there's no guarantee for that bona fide stud, you have to do it. And I'm confused why they're so reticent.
Yeah, I think, I mean, in my mind, essentially what they're stating here, and you can debate this, like you and I went back and forth on this, I think they're essentially saying we don't want to give Jimmy Butler $190 million over 5 years. And you could call that ridiculous. And you can say, like, the Nets think they're in a much better place than they are, and they're slightly delusional, and Marks doesn't appreciate just how long this franchise has been terrible. But that's the reality of it, because I think if you were interested in giving him 5 years, $190 million, then the Nets are doing this 10 times out of 10, because there's no way, based on your infrastructure and based on your track record, you can just bank on him coming in free agency. It's a possibility, but I would say he's more likely to go to one of the LA teams or the Knicks or Miami or somewhere we're not even expecting than to end up in Brooklyn. So that's kind of my takeaway from it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's gotten to the point where every very good player is getting a max contract, and those 5 for $190 slots should be reserved for truly the elite of the elite who are in the prime of their career. And a guy like Jimmy Butler is good enough where at least one team will give it to him. But it does make sense that the Nets aren't necessarily thrilled about giving him that contract, because I wouldn't be either. So if that's the rationale behind it, then it makes more sense than it just like Caris LeVert is going to be the next KD, and that's what they're thinking.
Right. And I think I'm assuming what their plan is like they almost like can't afford, from like just like a PR perspective, to just say like, no, we have zero interest, we're not going to be a part of this conversation. I mean, even in terms of making a pitch to him in free agency, if it potentially comes to that, you want to be able to say, hey, we tried to trade for you, like Minnesota and like Glenn Taylor and Tom Thibodeau were being absolutely insane and we didn't really have a fair chance of getting you. So I think that is the reason you hear them, outside of the obvious that Butler mentioned them, the fact that you hear that the Nets are in conversations. And it was interesting, because despite that qualifier that the Nets weren't going to give up Caris LeVert, Kevin O'Connor, who's pretty well plugged in, said he still considers the Nets one of the two most likely landing spots for Butler ultimately. So I thought that was intriguing. But I think it's smart of the Nets to be in the conversation, but not so much that they're going to go get him, because they clearly don't want to give him that deal.
Yeah, no, it depends. I think that it's smart to kind of, there's no point in really making the trade now. Let's assess options once the season gets underway, especially after December 15th, when players who were just signed can also be traded again. So I think it makes sense for the Nets to kind of play their cards close to the vest and see how the Timberwolves demands kind of shape over time.
All right. And then there was an interesting quote that you had on Kenneth Faried from Kenny Atkinson.
Yep. Interesting quote. We talked about Faried last time, saying that Kenny Atkinson was really impressed with him, that he would get minutes. I kind of pushed back on that. I think he's just saying it now to save face and keep his options open. And someone from, was it Puccio maybe, that asked, is there still an expectation that Faried will play significantly? And Kenny Atkinson responded saying, I think that's still open. We've got a lot of big guys right now. I think it's too early to say who's going to be in the rotation and who's not out of all those big guys. We can't play them all. I've been happy with what I've seen so far on the court. So I think just confirming my take from last time, and that I was right, and just wanted to throw that in here.
Okay, now I appreciate self-affirmation wherever we can get it. That'll wrap up our first segment on the Locked On Nets podcast. We are coming back with some rapid-fire training camp questions next on Locked On Nets. Locked On NFL is becoming everyone's favorite daily national NFL podcast. Mondays, it's the local experts on the biggest stories of the week. Tuesdays, former NFL QB Sage Rosenfels joins Matt Williamson. Wednesday, it is Mike Renner of Pro Football Focus. Thursdays, it is the great Mike Sando of ESPN. And Friday, get Matt's picks only on Locked On NFL. Peak ticket season in New York is fast approaching, and we know that you want to be a part of it. The NFL is in full swing, the Yankees are getting ready for a playoff run, and hockey and basketball are just around the corner. And there's no better option to get a great deal on attending any of those events than Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats allows you to sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice. To make things even better, Vivid Seats is giving listeners an exclusive promo code for $20 off orders of $200 or more to save you even more money. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Then use promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and enter promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more. That's LOCKEDON. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event. We are back on Locked On Nets. Gavin Shaw, Josh Bass. Josh Bass and Gavin Shaw, if you want to flip it. It doesn't feel right. It just doesn't.
Let us know. Tweet at us if you like my name first in the order.
I'm nauseous. All right. Rapid fire training camp questions. Zanin Musha, I just found out his last name is pronounced that way, because my concern was always his first name, which I just for the life of me could not get the first five times. The last name is apparently Musha. Musha.
It's Musha.
The greatest Musha. Player in Nets history is going to be named Musha. Anyways, maybe I gave it away there. But expectations we have for Zan and Musha heading into his first season. Josh?
I think it's going to be a lot of time in the D-League. I mean, I don't see him getting a ton of minutes off the bat, especially the Nets do have a pretty crowded wing rotation. He's not going to be strong enough to play the four on a consistent basis. I think it's best for him to have a developmental year with the G League Nets. We've seen that the Nets do that with a lot of their young guys, whether it be Chris McCullough, Isaiah Whitehead. Jared Allen didn't have that case, and neither did Caris LeVert, but I think those guys were on weaker teams than this current Nets roster. So I think expect to see Musha a lot in Long Island.
Yeah, no, and it's interesting because I think we were both of the opinion going into last season that Jared Allen was going to essentially have a redshirt year, maybe come on as a factor in the second half of the year. And now I feel naive applying it again, but I feel like that scenario will be similar with Zan and Musha. But and I guess the greater case for it is what you already mentioned. This team is clearly superior to what the Nets have had the last 2 years. And the fact that instead of being a center where the Nets desperately needed someone to emerge last season, the other option was Timofey Mozgov. They are loaded on the wing with not great NBA wings, but all guys who, at least this season, project to be better than Zan and Musha. So I think he takes a year, he gets totally ready physically, and maybe later in the season when the Nets are out of playoff contention or they just feel like he's ready, he comes on and he has a few nice games. I'll throw in a quick qualifier question on there. Do you see him having one game this year with over 20 points for the Nets?
Maybe, yeah, I'd say I lean no, but also it wouldn't surprise me if they're five games out of the playoff hunt.
Yeah.
With a few left to play in April, and they bring him up and say, here, have 35 minutes and 25 shots, and he gets 20 points. I don't think, if you ask me from the start of the season till the end of March, will he have one? Obviously not. April, it's a crapshoot.
Okay, all right, I like the answer. All right, next one. Any chance Caris LeVert ends up starting over Allen Crabb?
Yeah, I think there's a pretty good chance he starts over Allen Crabb. I mean, Crabb does have that big contract, but just the way they're talking this guy up, making it seem like he's really taking a huge leap and he's going to be one of the stalwarts of the team this year, I think there's over a 50% chance that he's in the starting lineup on opening night.
Yeah, I think I have a feeling he's actually going to come off the bench. I think they just like him in that role as a super sub, but I think he's going to be a much bigger part of the rotation. Like, not only is he going to be better this season, but I think he's going to overtake Crabb in terms of minutes, and they're going to use him, I guess, in kind of, obviously he's not the same player and this isn't the same team, but in kind of the same way the Spurs have used Manu Ginobili over all these years as like a nominal bench guy, but essentially a starter in terms of role and minutes. Like, I think he's going to be playing at pivotal points in the game. He's going to be in closing lineups alongside either D'Angelo Russell or Spencer Dinwiddie. I just think he's going to be a clearly superior player to Allen Crabb, even if Crabb takes some steps forward this season. All right, Josh, any chance, this is a much longer shot, any chance Spencer Dinwiddie starts over D'Angelo Russell?
Start the year? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
No, that's not going to happen.
Do you think it happens at any point this season?
Possibly at some point, especially maybe end of the season or at least after the All-Star break. I don't see for the first 2 months any chance that he would start over D'Lo because they're going to give him every opportunity to be successful and see what they have in him, considering he's a restricted free agent.
Yeah, no, I lean that way too. I think they're going to give him just as many, as you said, they want to have as large of a sample size as they possibly can to judge before committing to this guy. And I think Marks even had, like, I can't remember if it was at Media Day or over the summer, but he had like a quote where he was saying, like, he was open about the fact, like, I think it's like very unlikely we offer D'Lo an extension before the October deadline, if I'm remembering correctly. And so this is going to be a full season evaluation of the guy, and you want as much data as possible. All right, slight variation on that question. Do you see any chance that Spencer Dinwiddie starts alongside D'Lo? Obviously, when D'Lo was first coming back from injury and Dinwiddie was the best guy on this team, and it was pretty clear that he was the best guy on this team, they tried playing both of them together. It didn't really work, but there's been talk in training camp already of four-guard lineups and a lot of different units. With some of these guys playing off of each other, we thought the more likely candidate for that was Shabazz Napier, but could you see these two starting together or maybe closing together?
Definitely closing. I think starting, not off the bat, I think Kenny Atkinson is going to go with something a bit more traditional at the start of the season, which includes Damari Carroll and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson at the forward spots, and then either Crabb or LeVert at the two guard with D'Lo playing the one. But also, I wouldn't be surprised if 10 games into the season we scrap that and Dinwiddie joins D'Lo in the starting lineup. So I think Kenny Atkinson has a lot of flexibility and a lot of decisions to make because he has a ton of talented guys that should play, but no one as of now that's really going to separate themselves from the pack before the season starts. So he'll have to kind of figure it out and mix and match, especially in those first 15 games of the year.
Gotcha. All right. One of the big themes of training camp, at least in the early going, is the Nets potentially being better on defense this season. How realistic do you think that is? Because obviously they brought back most of the same core. We've talked about one of the biggest windows for just general improvement for the Nets this year is you're removing a bunch of guys who were just really disasters on both ends of the floor, like Quincy Acey, Timofey Mozgov, and you're replacing them with competent NBA players, someone like Ed Davis coming off the bench who can certainly defend his position. But do you see them being able to make a significant leap, like more than three or four spots in defensive rating, or do you think this is a case of incremental improvement that could continue down the road? Again, they were 25th in defensive rating last season.
Yeah, I think it's going to be more a case of incremental improvement because last year a big problem was not creating a ton of turnovers and also turning the ball over themselves, and that led to transition opportunities for the other team. And Ed Davis is going to help a lot, but also you have to think Jared Allen's going to play a lot more minutes this year, and he's going to be a very good defender in the long run, but he's still working out kinks of positioning and rebounding as of now. So I think on average, I'd say maybe they'll improve a couple spots, nothing dramatic.
All right, I'm with you on that. I thought Kenny Atkinson had a pretty interesting quote on it. This training camp, he wants them to up their activity, but to do so without compromising their kind of inherently conservative defensive scheme. And we've made many a mention of that on the podcast over the summer and last year. The Nets, in terms of opponent shot selection, were arguably the best team in the league. I think teams attempted the least amount of three-pointers in the NBA against them. They didn't always shoot well on those three-pointers, so the Nets forced a very healthy diet of shots from opposing teams, but they struggled to force turnovers, they struggled getting rebounds, they struggled not fouling, and all those areas added up to a defense that was very, very poor. So I'm wondering if there's a way to kind of tinker with that and create a better balance between the two, or if that's simply not realistic, and ultimately with the athletes they have, you can move things one direction or another stylistically, but the end result is pretty much going to be the same.
I think you could find that happy medium. I don't know, I just think that last year a lot of it was getting the scheme down, and now this year it's saying, let's take that shell, but also improve on it. So I think most good teams are able to force a lot of turnovers while at the same time sticking to their principles, thinking about a team like the Spurs and also the Heat back in the day when they had the big three.
Yeah, I know, and there's a lot of talk about guys like Caris LeVert and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson continuing to be leaders on that end of the floor, taking a step forward. Potentially, Alan Crabb feels like he could be much better defensively this year. So there are some reasons for cautious optimism. Obviously, we'll believe it when we see it. If I had to guess, I'd put the Nets around 20th in defensive rating next season. All right, best bench in the league. Do the Nets have it? The group, Spencer Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert, great teammate Joe Harris, Shabazz Napier, Eddie Davis. Other contenders I wrote down, Nuggets, Celtics, Raptors, Heats, Clip, Heat, Heats, Heat, Clips. Josh, your thoughts?
I think the Nets are definitely up in the conversation. So, you know what, I'll just go out on a limb and say, yes, they do have the best bench in the league. I think Boston has a really good bench, Toronto also. It's all about having those one or two like lead ball handlers that can kind of make things go. I mean, Fred VanVleet on Toronto, Celtics having Marcus Smart and Terry Rozier, and the Nets definitely have that if Dinwiddie and Caris are coming off the bench to start the year. So, we'll say they're the best.
Yeah, I like the Nuggets, too, with Will Barton. I think Trey Lyles is generally underrated. Mm-hmm. They seem like they have quite a Michael Porter Jr., if he's can somehow plays this year. Yeah, I know. Maybe. I like the Clippers, too, if they're rookies. I think I have a feeling like the rookies are going to be really, really good. So, I like all those
benches. I think Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is going to be awesome.
I'm a big Jerome Robinson fan. So, I like the Clippers group, too. They just have, like, so many guys on their team. It feels like they have, like, 10 starters. But I'll stick with you, and I'll say the Nets as well. All right, with that, we wrap up this edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. Tune in tomorrow when we're going through 20 through 16 of the hashtag Atlantic Division rank. We're getting closer and closer to culminating our much maligned series. Really appreciate it. Locked On NBA never went away and is still here for you every day. Locked On NBA is your daily national NBA podcast. Every Monday, get the local experts on the biggest stories and then stay with Locked On NBA all week long with daily 30-minute episodes on everything going on in the league. Follow for free at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On NBA.